They said Travis Decker was the end of the story. They were wrong. I told his story. Every shadow, every tape, every horror he left behind. But now, someone is telling mine. A new killer has emerged. One who doesn't target children but the people who turn pain into content. Podcasters. Journalists. Truth tellers. Like me. He calls himself Sonata Echo. And he's not just copying Travis Decker. He's evolving him. Cassette tapes. Reverse lullabies. Public executions disguised as podcasts. And a manifesto built from everything I thought I understood. This time the hunter is the hunted. My name is Marissa Lane. And if you're listening, it means I've chosen to finish the story he started. This is not justice. This is not closure. This is the copycat manifesto. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. I've always believed in the truth. Or at least in the version of it we can record, research, and publish. But what happens when the story you told starts bleeding back into your life? When the monster you chased leaves a mirror behind? Began with a package. No return address. No markings. Just a small worn-out cassette tape, wrapped in aged sheet music. The notes were smudged, water-damaged, torn at the corners like they'd been handled too many times. Scrawled across the label in jagged red ink. Lullaby reversed. No sender. No message. First I thought it was a prank. It wouldn't be the first time someone tried to get a rise out of me. Ever since Shadows of Justice went viral, I've been flooded with fan mail, conspiracy theories, copycat poetry, even marriage proposals. But this tape felt different. It smelled different. Like mildew and old smoke. Like it had survived something. I didn't touch it again until later that night. I waited until the lights were low and the building was quiet. That's the thing about podcasting. Silence becomes part of your process. It's not empty. It's charged. I pressed play. The static rolled in first. Familiar. Then a voice. Modulated. Like Travis Decker but as if someone was mimicking him through a broken speaker. You built your fame on screams. Now you'll learn what silence sounds like. Then came the music. A corrupted, backward version of Claire de Lune. Wrong notes, reversed chords, overlapping frequencies that made my chest tighten. Then the audio cut to what sounded like breathing. Labored. Strained. Then, a voice whispering my name. And finally, the sound of a door creaking open. Silence. That was the end of the tape. But not the story. 3 hours later, I got the call. Marcus Heller, host of Murder Myths, Season Truths Unfiltered, did live on stream. He was recording a special Patreon bonus episode about Travis Decker when the feed glitched. It showed him sitting in his apartment, talking into the mic, smiling. Then it froze. The next frame showed Marcus, slumped. Blood pooling beneath his chair. The only sound left was static. Then a faint melody. Claire de Lune. Slowed to half speed. The internet exploded. Screenshots flooded Reddit, Twitter, YouTube breakdown channels. Did someone just kill Marcus Heller live? Is this performance art? Is Travis Decker alive? That last one hit me hardest. Because even though I knew Decker was gone, something about this felt familiar. Too familiar. I called in a few favors. A tech forensics contact scraped the metadata from the stream archive. The file was hijacked mid-recording, she said. It was rerouted through an onion node with a location tag in Prague, but that's spoofed. So we're looking at a proxy? No. We're looking at a message. This wasn't about killing Marcus. This was about showing you. Me. The killer. Whoever they are. Left behind one more thing. Pinned to Marcus's corkboard. A page from my episode 1 script from Shadows of Justice. The line. The screams from the basement weren't just echoes. They were invitations. Below it, another note, handwritten in black ink. Echoes multiply. Welcome to your finale. Sonata Echo. That was the moment I realized. This wasn't just a copycat case. It was a meta-homicide. A serial killer weaponizing storytelling itself. They weren't killing victims. They were killing storytellers. And I was next. There's a moment in every story where you stop writing it, and realize it's writing you. That moment came for me when the FBI showed up on my doorstep. Two agents. Unmarked black SUV. Government issue politeness. They didn't knock twice. "Miss Lane, we need to talk. Now." I let them in. They knew about the cassette. They knew about Marcus Heller. They knew this wasn't random. "We believe you've been targeted," one of them said. "By who?" "Someone calling themselves Sonata Echo." "That name again." They handed me a file. Inside, three crime scene photos. Three victims. All podcasters. All true crime. Each was found with a single cassette. Each cassette contained a unique variation of Clair de Lune. Each track ended with a line from one of my own episodes. The agent flipped to the last page. "We're calling it the Echo Protocol. He's constructing a campaign. Narrative-based targeting. Think of it as manifesto terrorism." A chill ran down my spine. This wasn't about revenge. This was about reclamation. They told me I'd need to go dark for a while. They offered relocation. Witness protection. But I said no. I needed to understand him. Because whoever Sonata Echo was, he didn't just want to kill me. He wanted to convert me. I started digging. Scraped my inbox. Checked old interview requests, comment sections, DMs. Anywhere a voice might have slipped through the noise. That's when I found it. A deleted voice memo from 14 months ago. It came from an anonymous fan. Back when Shadows of Justice first went viral. It had been flagged by my autofilter and archived without playback. I hit play. "You speak of justice, but you sell grief. Decker was a composer. You made him a concert. Now you'll hear the notes he didn't finish." The voice was distorted. Modulated. But familiar somehow. Not in identity, in cadence. Measured. Scripted. Musical. I cross-referenced the waveform with the voice on the cassette labeled Lullaby Reversed. Same signature. It wasn't just the same person. It was the same performance. I traced the metadata. The original message was sent from an IP address tethered to a public library in Salt Lake City. I flew out the next morning. The library was glass and stone, towering and quiet. I spent 3 hours reviewing terminal logs, library card sign-ins, and Wi-Fi sessions. Dead ends. But then I noticed something strange. In the children's music section, the piano books, two copies of Debussy, Beginner's Guide to Clair de Lune had been removed and returned 3 days apart. Each had handwritten notes in the margins. "Resolve the note. In grief there is rhythm. Echoes don't lie." And at the bottom of the second copy, "Next movement, the Theater of Grief." I knew what that meant. The largest true crime podcast conference in the US was happening that weekend, in Chicago. I was scheduled to appear. So were five other major hosts. It was the perfect stage. The perfect finale. But Sonata Echo wasn't going to wait for the finale. That night, a streamer named Tessa Vaughn, best known for her TikTok series Criminal Crushes, was found dead in her dressing room during a live panel. Cassette in her hand. My voice in the background. A loop soundbite. "We all profit from pain. We just give it a prettier name." Words I had said. Words I meant. But not like this. Never like this. The killer had hijacked my voice. And now he was broadcasting his own. By the time I landed in Chicago, it was already too late. The headlines were everywhere. TikTok true crime star murdered at podcast convention. Another cassette killer victim? Is Sonata Echo real or viral hoax? But for me it wasn't news. It was personal. Tessa Vaughn wasn't just a streamer. He was a person. A daughter. A storyteller. And now, another name on a growing list of bodies left behind by a voice I couldn't identify, but couldn't stop hearing. The conference staff canceled all in-person panels. Security was tripled. FBI agents circled the building in plain clothes. And yet, inside the hotel ballroom, I found my name still printed on the main stage backdrop. Marissa Lane, the voice behind the justice. I tore it down, because I wasn't behind the justice anymore. I was inside the nightmare. Later that night, I received a Dropbox link from an untraceable email address. No message. Just a title, Red Room Number 3. I hesitated. Then I clicked. The video opened with a black screen. A cassette hissed. Then, a voice. "Tonight's program features our headliner, the architect of the Decker illusion, the mouthpiece of misery, the oracle of pain for profit, Marissa Lane. My breath caught. Please silence your cell phones, remove your morality, and enjoy the show. The screen cut to static. Then a room. Red light. A single chair. A figure slumped over it, lifeless. Cassette playing in the background. Claire de Lune, distorted and chopped into broken 3-second loops. My voice. From episode 4 of Shadows of Justice. Maybe monsters don't hide under beds. Maybe they sit beside us. Holding microphones. Cut to black. It wasn't real time. It was a pre-recorded murder dressed up like a live stream. Stylized. Edited. Scored like a trailer. I was no longer watching the news. I was watching a production. The FBI dubbed the video series, The Red Room Reels. There were now 4 known versions circulating in hidden corners of the internet, mostly on alt forums and encrypted liveshare apps. Each one opened with a different victim. Each featured my voice, twisted, reused, recontextualized. Not just as a narrator but as a co-conspirator. I started receiving messages. From strangers. You helped create this. The killer is your fault. This is what you get for making murder entertainment. Justice? You wanted followers. I knew they weren't entirely wrong. That was the hardest part. That night, I tried to record a personal response. No script. No sponsors. No intro music. Just me. A mic. A bottle of whiskey. And a voice breaking. My name is Marissa Lane, and I don't know what's real anymore. There's a killer out there. Maybe someone I interviewed, maybe someone I ignored. But whoever they are, they know me better than I know myself. They've studied my voice, my cadence, my pauses. They've turned me into a character. And now they're writing the ending. Then I heard it. From the hallway. A cassette player. Hiss. Playing through my hotel room door. I froze. I approached slowly. Slid open the peephole. The hallway was empty. But taped to the door was a single photograph. Me. Sitting in my New York apartment. From last year. Same sweater. Same headphones. The angle was from behind. It hadn't been published anywhere. No watermark. No fan edit. It was real. Someone had been in my home. Watching me. Maybe still was. I turned the photo over. A message handwritten in perfect block letters. Next movement begins at dawn. Encore optional. You don't really understand fear until you hear your own voice used against you. That's what the killer was doing. He wasn't just copying Travis Decker's methods. He was remixing mine. He was composing something cruel out of my pauses, my tone, my breath. My life's work, twisted into a weapon. But it was what happened at the conference memorial that shattered everything I thought I still understood. The organizers held a candlelight vigil for Tessa Vaughn in the hotel's west atrium. Quiet. Small. Just 30 of us, huddled beneath a glass ceiling as dusk washed the skyline in bruised red and purple. I was asked to say something. I told myself I would speak. I owed her that. But as I stood behind the mic looking at her photo, the one where she's laughing, eyes crinkled, hair wild and free, I froze. I remembered something Tessa once said on a panel we did together last year. She was nervous but proud. If we don't tell these stories, someone else will. And they might not tell them with love. That was her mission. And it became her eulogy. I stepped back. I couldn't speak. Because I wasn't telling the story anymore. I was trapped inside it. Hours later, I got a text. No name. Just a location. Theater of Grief, 4th floor. No intermission. I knew the hotel didn't have a 4th floor ballroom. But there was a long-abandoned screening room, once part of a private club before the renovations. Staff said no one had the keys anymore. I found it anyway. The doors creaked open into darkness. Dust curled in the air like stage smoke. Rows of red velvet chairs, some slashed open, others stained. A spotlight flicked on from somewhere behind me, automatic motion sensor maybe. And there, center stage, was an old upright piano. On the bench, another cassette tape. No label this time. Just a play button. I hit record on my phone and pressed play. A distorted voice bled through the static. Low, deliberate, uncannily calm. Marissa. You have built your stage with blood and sorrow. Dressed your grief in polished narration. You call it justice. But it's applause you crave. He paused. Then piano keys. Out of tune. Jagged. Violent. Then back to the voice. Every victim had a story. but you chose the ones that fit your tone, your arc, your audience. I am the unresolved note in your soundtrack. And you are the final movement. I left the room shaking, sweat down my back, phone still recording. That tape wasn't just a message. It was a stage direction. And the killer had written me into his act. That night I broke. I went live. Unfiltered, no edits, no producer. This is Marissa Lane. I don't know how many of you are listening, or if you're still with me after everything. But I'm tired of hiding behind scripts. This killer is targeting us because we've made pain public. Because we turned trauma into content. And maybe he's right to be angry. But murder isn't a manifesto. It's a coffin. And if you're listening, Sonata Echo, if you're out there, come for me next. Do it in the light. No more red rooms. No more lullabies. Come see what real grief sounds like when it fights back. I didn't sleep. At 3:04 a.m. I got a reply. A cassette. Delivered to the hotel front desk by an Uber courier with no return order. This one had a title. Finale, Draft 1. And written on the envelope in soft pencil. The audience will decide the ending. When I first started my podcast, I thought exposure was power. That the more you revealed, the more you reclaimed. But now I understand. Exposure is a two-way mirror. And on the other side of it, someone's always watching you back. I took the cassette marked Finale, Draft 1 to a private studio. I didn't want to listen to it in a hotel room, not again. I needed light, soundproofing, and a panic button within reach. The tape began the same way. Piano notes. Claire de Lune, this time slowed to the pace of a heartbeat. Then the voice. Not Decker. Not fully distorted this time either. Sonata Echo. You stepped into the fire with a mic and called it journalism. But what you built was not truth. It was performance. And now the stage burns with you on it. Then came the twist. You began naming names. My sources. My guests. My editors. One by one. Evan R. Episode 9. Lied about the abuse. Camille W. Episode 15. Sold her story to Netflix 2 weeks before she spoke to you. Then he played unedited audio. Raw clips. B-roll I'd cut. Moments where my guests stumbled, contradicted themselves, revealed things I'd chosen not to air. Not out of malice, but out of protection, clarity, narrative flow. But now, it all sounded manipulative. He was weaponizing my edits. I sat there, stunned as my own voice whispered. Let's cut that, it makes you sound unreliable. Do you mind rephrasing that part about your mother crying? It feels too real. Too real. I had said that. And now, Sonata Echo was using it to prove his point. That I wasn't a truth teller. I was a curator of trauma. I drove straight back to the hotel, tears fogging my vision. By the time I arrived, I had 50 new notifications. All anonymous. Screenshots of the leaked tape. It was already online. Reddit threads. TikTok breakdowns. YouTubers reacting in real time, mouths wide open, headlines flashing. Did Marissa Lane fake her podcast? Truth or performance? The fall of Justice's voice. The copycat strikes again, this time with receipts. That's when the email came. Subject line, how does it feel to be the story? Attached was a still image. Security camera frame. Of me. Standing in the studio. From the tape listening room. Taken just 2 hours earlier. He was inside the building. I ran to security. No help. No leads. The camera was hacked. He had access. Or someone did. The FBI reassigned 2 agents to shadow me 24/7. Not because they thought I was unsafe, but because I was becoming the primary target. I needed help. Someone who'd seen this before. Someone who could read past the public story into the subtext. I called Eleanor Decker. Yes, that Eleanor. Travis Decker's ex-wife. She answered after the second ring. You think this new one is just a copy? Isn't he? No, she said. He's smarter. He told me something that chilled me. Travis wanted control. This man wants collapse. He's not trying to finish Travis's work. He's trying to erase yours. That's when it clicked. He wasn't coming for me because I told Travis's story. He was coming because I survived it. Because I lived to tell it. And that made me the one thing he hated most. A living contradiction. That night, I checked into a private apartment under an alias. No one knew where I was, or so I thought. But on the kitchen table was a single sheet of paper. Piano sheet music. Handwritten. Title at the top, Requiem for the Fraud. At the bottom, one line. You've had your solo. Now it's time for the duet. I didn't sleep. Not after the note. Not after the music sheet titled Requiem for the Fraud. Because it wasn't just a threat. It was a cue. And I was being drawn into the final movement. I looped everything I had on Sonata Echo. The cassettes. The Red Room videos. The audio distortions. The kill order. The leaked tapes. I ran voice analysis software, facial geometry overlays from blurry surveillance footage, even behavioral profiling databases. And then, something clicked. One of the distorted voice files had a tell, a drop in pitch at the tail end of a sentence. The software matched it to a clip from an old episode of my podcast. One that never aired. Episode 27. A guest named Noel Stanton. He'd claimed to be a trauma survivor. Said he'd been abused by a family member and turned to music for therapy. The episode was never released. Something about him felt off. His eyes were too focused. His voice too polished. His story too rehearsed. I'd thanked him and shelved the episode. Never posted it. Now I was staring at a waveform match. 96% identical. I pulled up the original file. Listened again. Trauma is a performance we're taught to repeat until it becomes real. I hadn't heard it then. Now I heard everything. I traced the name. Noel Stanton was a pseudonym. His real name was Julian Reed, a former Juilliard student expelled for emotional destabilization and staged psychological experiments on classmates. He'd vanished from public life in 2017, after posting a manifesto online titled, The Theater of Grief. The manifesto was deleted by moderators within hours. But I found a cached copy. Here's how it opened. There will always be victims. The difference is I give mine a purpose. I had my man, but not my closure. Because when I played the tape from the Red Room number 4 folder again, this time knowing it was him, I heard something new. In the background of the video, right before the final cut, a woman's voice, gagged, muffled, sobbing, alive. I alerted the FBI. They moved fast, traced the IP used to post the latest drop. Abandoned theater in Detroit. Art Deco. Built in 1928. Closed since 2012. They raided it that night. Inside they found cameras, lights, soundproof walls. And one thing they didn't expect. A live set. An audience of mannequins seated in rotting chairs. On the stage, a recording rig. And in the center, me. A life-sized cardboard cutout of my face taped to a mannequin dressed in my signature black blazer and headphones. Sitting at a mic. A red light blinking. Broadcasting. Nothing. On the piano was a cassette labeled. Finale, Draft 2. I played it. Julian's voice again. You were never supposed to find me. You were supposed to become me. But you don't understand the silence. You only fear it. Still, I forgive you. Like Travis forgave his audience. The next voice you hear will not be mine. Then came a new voice. Feminine. Weak. Trembling. Please. Please stop. He made me lie. I recognized it. Camille White. The guest from episode 15. The one Julian said had sold her story to Netflix. He was alive. That changed everything. This wasn't a kill spree. It was a performance with a captured cast. Julian wasn't just echoing Travis Decker's legacy. He was directing his own. I shut off the tape. Looked at the agents. He's not done. Then where is he? One asked. Where he always wanted to be, I said. Back on stage. There's a moment in every descent where the fear stops being sharp. Becomes dull. Familiar. Like background noise in your blood. That's what I felt the morning I walked into the abandoned broadcasting theater where Julian Reed, Sonata Echo, planned his final act. The FBI wanted to storm it. But he'd made it clear. If I didn't go alone, Camille White dies, live on stream. So I agreed. Bulletproof vest under my jacket. Mic taped under my collar. Hidden tracker under my belt buckle. But inside I was screaming. Not for myself. For what I might find. The theater was ancient. Dust like snowfall. Rows of velvet seats eaten by rats and time. He'd lit it all. Stage lights on full blast. Everything red. It looked like a crime scene designed by an art director. And in the center of the stage, under a spotlight, a chair, a microphone, a cassette deck. No Julian. Not yet. Just a single card taped to the mic. Press play. Deliver the lines. Don't improvise. I stepped up to the mic. Pressed play. The tape hissed, then began. Good evening, dear audience. Welcome to the only show that dares ask the question. What happens when the storyteller becomes the story? Our guest tonight needs no introduction. You've bought her merch. You've downloaded her pain. You've turned her voice into your lullaby. Then came my own voice, clips from my show. I believe in justice. I believe every victim deserves a voice. I believe we have a responsibility to tell these stories. Then Julian's voice returned. But who gives the victim permission? And who gave you the right to sell their grief? I stepped back from the mic. Julian, I said out loud. This isn't justice. This is ego. You're not exposing the truth. You're hiding behind it. Let her go. That's when the screen behind me flickered to life. Live feed. Camille White. Bound to a chair. Gagged. Breathing. Alive. She looked directly at the camera. Then at me. Julian's voice crackled over the speakers. She told a story that wasn't hers. Just like you do. Tonight, you decide how this ends. The feed split in two. One stream showing Camille. One showing a ticking clock. 10 minutes. What is this? I said. A final episode, he replied. You speak. She lives. You stall. She dies. But no edits this time. No filters. No music cues. Just truth. I looked back at the camera. And I spoke. Not for the audience. Not for the downloads. But for her. My name is Marissa Lane. And I don't deserve your forgiveness. I shaped pain into paragraphs. I sliced horror into sound bites. Because I wanted to be heard. But Camille didn't ask for that. None of them did. The countdown ticked under 2 minutes. The screen glitched. Julian's voice returned. But it was different now. Trembling. Almost human. You were never supposed to mean it. You were supposed to break. To run. But you didn't. A silence followed. Then, she's yours. The screen cut to black. Moments later, the SWAT team burst through a hidden panel behind the curtains. No resistance. They found Camille locked in a soundproof room upstairs, dehydrated, scared, alive. Julian. Gone. Vanished backstage. A note left behind on the piano. You gave the audience closure. That was never the point. I collapsed in the hallway. I remember gripping Camille's hand, the two of us shaking. I remember thinking, this story should have ended with Travis. But stories don't end. They echo. The headlines came fast. Hostage rescued in live-streamed finale. Copycat killer vanishes after orchestrating audio terror campaign. Julian Reed, the new Travis Decker? But for me, there was no headline. No punchline. No closure. Just a room full of lights. A microphone still warm. And a silence so loud it hasn't stopped ringing. Camille White survived. She's recovering in a safe house. She doesn't talk much. And who can blame her? She was kidnapped not by a stranger, but by a story. She was abducted by expectation, by the mythos we built. I built. Around justice, redemption, grief. A production dressed in empathy but packaged in entertainment. And now she knows the truth. There's no script that can explain what Julian did. No episode that makes it clean. The FBI continues to investigate. They found Julian's hideout 2 days later. A loft above a piano repair shop in Detroit. Inside, hundreds of cassette tapes, arranged in a wall-sized mosaic of faces. Our faces. Podcast hosts. YouTubers. Victims. Fans. Me. At the center of the wall, a mirror. Written on the glass in music notation. The listener is the final accomplice. He was never trying to disappear. He was trying to echo. And he did. I haven't released a new episode since. The feed still exists. So do the archives. But Shadows of Justice isn't just mine anymore. Belongs to them now. To Travis. To Julian. To Camille. To the audience. To the ones who listened. And to the ones who watched too long. People ask me if I'd do it again. If I'd investigate Travis Decker. If I'd publish the tapes. if I'd step onto that stage. I don't know. All I know is this. Stories survive longer than people. And sometimes they turn on you. But maybe that's what we deserve. For every time we turn someone's trauma into a title. For every time we edited out the tears but kept the scream. For every time we said, this story matters. Without asking who it mattered to. So here I am. Marissa Lane. Microphone off. Headphones on the table. No outro music. No fade to black. Just one last truth. I was the voice of justice. No, I'm just an echo.